Here on No Nonsense Nutrition, it's always a challenge to come up with something new to tickle your little gray cells. And, you know, when I look at the nature of my practice, I really see the awareness that my clients have about cold and flu season. So remember when Mama said wash your hands? Well, here's Eve Prangpluse, and what I'm saying is wash your hands, and wash your hands, and did I mention washing your hands? Cover your sneezes and coughs, same thing Mama told you. Why? Because the flu has begun, and we can learn in this next part of the program both prevention and treatment of the dreaded influenza virus. You know, this nasty little contagious virus that really is all about the chest. You know, we talk about colds and flus, and oftentimes I have clients call up and they say, oh, I'm coming down with the flu. And I go, uh-uh, baby, you don't be coming down. You either have it or you don't, because flu is distinct in the fact that its onset is abrupt. Colds come on gradually. Colds come on over 6 to 24 hours. You know, you start out with a couple of sneezes. You got a little scratchy place in your throat. You got a dribble coming out your nose. And I tell people all the time, there's that dry place in your throat. It's about the size of a half a dollar, even though we don't use those very much anymore. That little circle in your throat where you feel like you can't get it wet. When you swallow, your spit goes around it. You got that scratchiness, you got a few sneezes, you feel a little off, and you got a dribble coming out your nose. It's not mucus at this point, it's just water. That is the gradual onset of a cold. But with flu, you're fine at 2 o'clock, you're fine at 10 minutes after 2, and then at 2:15, you feel like you've been hit by a bus. You need to get the license plate of that bus so you can call them up and tell them to come back and finish the job, because usually the aches are very common with flu and they're often severe. And so the abrupt onset of a fever, the abrupt onset of symptoms, especially severe aches and commonly even chills, are distinguishing the influenza virus from the rhinovirus or the cold virus. You know, fever is very rare with a cold. Fever may show up with colds when you're dealing with 2 and 3 year olds, but it's pretty rare all in all with colds. Sometimes you get some slight aches with colds, but it's incredibly unusual for us to have a cold that has aches and pains with it. And because we don't have fever with colds, we also don't have chills, because chills and fever almost always go together. You know, chills are your immune system trying to turn on. I talked to a client last week and I said, it's like sticking your key in the car and you go to turn it over and the battery doesn't quite turn the car over, and you hear that rah, 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 rah. And you try it again, going, oh no, rah, 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 rah. And it won't quite turn over. That's exactly what the chills are. The chills are the body trying to engage a fever. Actually, in homeopathy, we try to bring on a fever, because a fever is one of your tremendous fight powers to get rid of both viruses and bacteria. And so, you know, if a fever is under 101, you don't want to treat it at all. If it's 101 to 103, you want to treat it hourly. And the way that I do it is with homeopathic remedies. If the fever goes over 103, you want to treat it every 15 minutes until it gets down below 103. And, you know, cool water is one of the things that you can use to treat a fever. And you want to remember, when you have a fever, every time you eat, it's going to go up in the hour or so afterward. And that is just the normal cycle of the way that fevers happen. But fatigue is very usual with the flu. And because the fever can last 3 to 4 days with the flu, you get pretty tired of it. So the fatigue is not just physical fatigue, it's also mental fatigue. You know, the sneezing and the stuffiness and the sore throat sometimes happens with a flu, but really not very often, where it's incredibly common as far as a cold is concerned. Both of them can have a chest cough. Usually if you've got a cough with a cold, it's kind of a mild to moderate hacking cough. But a chest cough where you hear the mucus rattle is more common with the flu, and it goes along with the headache, whereas colds rarely have a headache. So there is a very simple way to distinguish colds and flus most of the time, and that is between the sudden onset and the instant fever and ache that almost never happen with a cold and almost always happen with the flu. And so you can remember the word facts, F-A-C-T-S. F for fever, A for aches, C for chills, T for tired, and S for sudden. Fever, aches, chills, tired, and sudden onset. The facts are, that's the flu. Well, you know, a lot of us get the flu. Anywhere from 15 to 60 million people get the flu every year in the United States. And yeah, it does kill some people. Might kill 3,000 one year, could kill 48,000 another year. It's an ugly number. You know, we average about 23, 24,000 deaths from the flu every year, the majority of which are individuals that are well past 70 and individuals who have a history of lung ailments. But you know what's true is that flus are changing all the time. And the Center for Disease Control and Infection in Atlanta sends watchers. And, you know, for years they used to send these watchers to California and see what influenza viruses were showing up in California in the spring. Now they, because of air travel, sending these viruses around the world really quickly, those CDC watchers are sent to Asia every spring, and they are actually in the wintertime, usually February, March. And they see what viruses are common because the majority of these viruses move from west to east. So the viruses that happen in Japan and China and Indonesia and Malaysia and Australia and all of that area last winter in February, March are commonly the ones that show up here this winter. And so those observers see which of these influenzas are the most common. And they pick three of those influenzas that they see that are the most common in Southeast Asia. And those are the ones that are chosen for the drug companies to begin to make the official flu vaccine of the 2012 and 2013 season. And so there are always going to be three species in the flu shots. And those three species are going to depend on what they find in Asia. Well, you know, you've heard of influenza type A. Type A is the flu that often comes from a DNA mutation of a flu that ducks get or chickens get or pigs get. You've heard of swine flu. You've heard of bird flu. Well, those are influenza A's. And in Southeast Asia, where poverty is rampant, it's not unusual for people to be living under the same roof with their farm animals. You know, it may be the most valuable thing that you own is your chicken, because your chicken provides you with eggs. And so when we look at this close community of people and animals, we will see that there is an opportunity there for the DNA that a duck has to mutate and create a bird flu that then a human can get. You know, there's influenza type B. This is an influenza that's exclusive to humans. And this usually has a very wide circulation, and actually it has been the foundation of the epidemics in the past. And then there is influenza type C, much less common. Again, humans, pigs, and dogs actually can mutate this DNA and create these viruses, but it's very rare that it causes epidemics. So when we look at these particular species, we'll find out that every year there's a different collection of these viruses that are going to be put into the flu shot. And so when we look at the viral surveillance as of this week, what they found out is over the 5,000 tests that were done by the CDC, about 15% of them came back positive for influenza. And one of the ones that showed up was called the novel influenza A virus. There was one human in all of the whole United States, and they live in Iowa near a farm. And they ended up with a flu that was not like anybody else's flu. this year. And that novel influenza A virus happened with a variant virus of the H3N2 category. And that becomes more meaningful because this is the first H3N2 viral infection reported since last September. So there's all sorts of variant viruses. And when I say all sorts, you go, well, Eve, I thought you said that the CDC makes a flu shot that only has three species in it. That's right. And that's why the flu shot is a total crapshoot. And it's a total crapshoot because if the people that pick the species that go in the flu shot are wrong, then you could have gotten a flu shot that is totally useless. Because there could be 15 species of flu that show up any given year, and they may not be any one of the three that showed up in the shot. You know, it's really interesting when you look at the reports that come from the drug companies about the shots themselves, and you see right on there, it will say, right on the very front page of the vaccine inoculation paperwork that you get in the box, that there have never been any studies to prove that the flu vaccine works. And obviously, since the flu vaccine changes every year, there's no opportunity to actually test it and see if it works. And so we hear these announcements that say, oh, young children are in danger. Pregnant women are in danger. Elderly and the people who have asthma and the people who have COPD, these people are in danger. Well, I'm here to tell you, they may be in danger from the flu shot itself. We very rarely had deaths of children from the flu. Kids under 12 years old, it was a very rare occurrence to have the tragedy of losing a child as a result of the flu. Back in 1999, 25 kids died from the flu. By the time we got to 2002, only 12 kids died of the flu. And then there was a great big push to get kids under 5 years old inoculated. And guess what happened the next year? 90 kids died from the flu. So when we look at what happened after the CDC kept trying to emphasize to parents to get their little kids vaccinated, we had more kids that died from the flu. You know, Lancet, the Journal of the British Medical Association, came out with an article 2 years ago that showed that there was no evidence whatsoever that these flu shots had any prevention effect in children that were young, specifically children under 2 years old. They found out that the live flu virus, which is the spray that goes in the nose, had about a 33% protection for children. And the inactivated virus, the shot, had about a 36% protection with children. So in other words, if you had three kids and all three of them got vaccinated, one of them might not get the flu. But according to the article, there was no improvement in flu prevention for people either under 65 or over 65. And those studies are uniquely different. Remember, when we study individuals, we put them into age categories of infants, toddlers, young children, teens, young adults, middle-aged, 65. And I've laughed about this before here on No Nonsense Nutrition, where I said that they used to lump everybody over 65 into one category. And then we started having so many people that were surviving to 85 and higher, they had to create a new group of individuals that were 85 and older. And, you know, they really went to a lot of creative trouble to come up with the name of that group. And they referred to people over 65 as the old, and they refer to people over 85 as the very old. Yeah, and it took grant money to come up with that. So if the experts are wrong and those three species that they put in this year's flu virus shots or flu vaccine shots are the wrong one, then the vaccine is useless. Not only did it not prevent the flu, as far as individuals 65 and younger, there was no change in hospital stays, there was no change in the amount of time that was off work, and there was no change in deaths as a result of individuals getting a flu vaccine. You know, in 2006, the British Medical Journal just essentially said that flu vaccines have little or no effect. And what is a real mind blower is that about 70% of doctors and nurses refuse a flu shot. Over 60% of healthcare workers don't get a flu shot. And even year before last, when we had the H1N1 in 2009, the swine flu that killed nearly 20,000 people, remember that? Everybody was afraid that we were going to have dump trucks out in the street to pick up the bodies because we had so many people dying of H1N1. 50% of doctors and nurses refused to get that flu vaccine shot. So when we look at getting a flu shot, kind of hard to look at the data and say it's a really good idea. You know, Epidemiology and Infection, which is a major medical journal, did a study that clearly showed that if we were low in vitamin D, it weakened our immunity. And when you look at flu around the world, you find out that flu is very rare near the equator, where people have higher vitamin D levels. So what's your first clue in terms of reducing the chance that you're going to get the flu? I said it earlier, wash your hands. But the second thing is to make sure your vitamin D is in an adequate level. You know, when you test your vitamin D, and it's called 2,5-OH vitamin D when you go to the doctor's office, 2,5-OH vitamin D shows its range from 30 to 60 on your test result. Well, that doesn't mean 31 is good. The mean, the middle between 30 and 100 is 65, and that's the number we're shooting for, 65 to 85, right up there in the third quartile of the test results. So the bottom half of the test results would be a number between 30 and 65, and the top half of the test results would be a number between 65 and 100. And that's where we want to head, because vitamin D is one of the very small handful of things that can actually help to improve your immunity in such a way that it makes it tougher for you to catch the flu. Now, 135 million flu shots have been made available in the United States. You want to talk about a cash cow for the pharmaceutical industry? We've already delivered 85 million of these shots, and they're delivering them right here in Sarasota County. In fact, if you want to get a flu shot, you can boogie on over to the health department and you can get a flu shot and spend anywhere from $32 to $47 to get that flu shot. You know, the one that really scares me is that almost 20% of people that get a flu shot get them in a drugstore. And yeah, it does scare me because the few people that can have some sort of a reaction, they certainly aren't prepared in a drugstore to take care of it. And what kind of reaction can we have? Well, because all vaccines are immunosuppressive. Now you go, wait a minute, Eve. I thought vaccines were designed to improve your immunity. Yeah, but initially they're inflammatory. And the place that the inflammation can happen the easiest is the cardiovascular system. You know, Annals of Medicine 5 years ago published a really important study that showed that the inflammation in the cardiovascular system can last for weeks after the flu shot is given and create normal arterial function to be abnormal. Yeah, it changes the way our arteries work. And you've heard me talk on No Nonsense Nutrition before about LDL, low-density lipoprotein, or what some people call the lousy cholesterol. As I've said 1,000 times, cholesterol is not the problem as far as heart disease is concerned. One of the problems as far as cardiovascular disease is LDL that's become oxidized. That fat actually becomes rancid. And what happens with flu shots is the LDL continues to oxidize for at least 2 weeks after the flu shot's been given. And that's what causes the abnormal arterial function. So because of the cardiosystem inflammation, we see an effect on suppressing the immune system. Now we see another effect on that because there is mercury in every flu shot. You know, thimerosal, that compound that metabolizes into ethyl mercury is 50%, actually 49% of the volume of every flu shot. It's about 12 milligrams. And the Environmental Protection Agency says that a tenth of a milligram per kilo of body weight. So essentially divide your body by a little bit more than in half. So if you weighed 150 pounds, then half of that would be 75, so about 70 kilos. So in other words, the EPA says 7 micrograms. I might have said milligrams, but I was wrong. It's micrograms. I'm correcting myself. 7 micrograms would be what you would get in a shot. Well, the EPA says that's a neurotoxin. And so if you weigh 265 pounds or more, then the EPA would tell you that those 12 mics that were present, 12 micrograms of thimerosal that are present in the flu shot would not be hazardous. But if you weigh less than 265 pounds, then the EPA themselves says that the amount of ethyl mercury that you're going to get out of a flu shot is neurotoxin. You know, we have these neurons in our brain. And these neurons, in some way, look like the tendrils of a plant. So you can picture the cell, the neuron itself. Think of that like a little circle. And then coming out from it are branches, all these neurolites, all these neuron dendrites, all of these neurofibrils. And so these little fibrils are what are connect the dots. See, right now, as you're learning new information, you listen to No Nonsense Nutrition because you want to be smarter and because you want to be healthier. And that's usually what happens with WSLR listeners. They're smarter than the average bear. And so because you want to learn how to be both smarter and healthier, your brain right now, as you're gathering new information, is taking those neurons inside your brain and trying to grow new little neurofibrils to connect this information to other information that you already have in your brain. That's how you think. Well, when you expose the growth cone, okay, now it's a new term for you, right at the end of the neuron, right at the end of the neurite, you've got a growth cone. You've got the tip. You know, it's the same thing as a plant. If you go out to any of the plants in your yards and you snap off the very tip end, that branch will stop growing. Now, it'll grow in a different way. You know that because you trim your bushes. But the nature of these neurons in your brain is if you denude that growth cone, if you take off that tip end of that growth of the neuron, then it all withers. You can't learn then. And so that's the way that mercury acts as a neurotoxin. And that's the reason that if there's one person that's out there listening, that's pregnant, that's been told by their doctor that they need to get a flu shot, you need to think again. Because no place is thimerosal more toxic than to the developing fetus. You know, we know that when pregnant women have an immune challenge, any kind of a big immune challenge during their pregnancy, they increase the risk of autism and schizophrenia in their babies 7 to 14-fold. That's one of the scariest things that I've ever said in all the years that I've been here on the radio. To reduce the potential of having a schizophrenic or an autistic child simply by getting the flu or getting a flu shot, two things, an immune challenge. Well, if a flu shot isn't an immune challenge, I don't know what is, because you're exposing the immune system to three different species at once. You never catch three different species of flu all at one time. So if you ever want to look at what mercury does to a brain cell, type in on your search engine, the University of Calgary Mercury movie, or something to that effect, because University of Calgary in Canada is the one that did this research and has a really dramatic video of what happens when the growth cones on these neurons actually get denuded. The neurofibrils get denuded. They can no longer make GTP energy. a little different than the ATP that you make in your body. But it alters all membrane structure. And so that's what happens with thimerosal, and that's the reason that I think that flu shots are dangerous. It isn't just the fact that they don't work. It's the fact that they can actually cause harm. So what are you going to do? You're going to wash your hands. You're going to optimize your vitamin D. And you're going to know that there are very specific things that we can use, and those are things like beta-glucan. You know, beta-glucan is a compound that we don't make in mammal cells. And what happens with beta-glucan is that this product, which comes to you from baker's yeast. Now, there are other places that you can get beta-glucan. Beta-glucan can be found in wheat, and it can be found in several other things. But I think the most powerful of the beta-glucans can be derived from the cell wall of baker's yeast. And so when we look at products that contain these whole glucan particles, and that really is a difference when you talk about whole beta-glucan particles and fractured beta-glucan particles. When we look at the nature of beta-glucan, it's probably one of the few things that we can use that actually changes our white blood cells. And it changes our white blood cells in such a way that it makes them, well, I want to call them snipers. It actually is recognized by the immune system and taken up into the macrophages, the neutrophils, the T cells. And so when we administer these beta glucans that are made from the cell wall of yeast, it creates a first line of defense and cellular immunity. It helps the cells gobble up not only viruses, but bacteria. The beta-glucan binds itself to the granulocytes, to the neutrophils, to these blood cells. These are the most abundant immune cells in the body. And the neutrophils then become primed. And then they're, you know, better able to go after any kind of microbial challenge. This is a process called chemotaxis. And so these primed neutrophils will migrate to the target site. So now you just shook hands with somebody that sneezed into their hand and they've got the flu virus in their hand, and you take that hand and you rub your eyes. And you have just chosen one of the three major points of administration, the eyes, the nose, and the mouth, for getting that flu virus into your body. Now, flu viruses really just like to move in cold air. As long as we continue having these 70-degree days, there's going to be very little flu that's going to show up here in Sarasota County. Pretty much what's going to happen is the people that already got infected before they left their home in Michigan and New York and Connecticut and New Jersey and came down here for their winter snowbird event, and then they got sick after they got here. That's the majority of the flu that we're seeing in Sarasota County right now. So if you shook hands with that person who just sneezed into their hand and right away you rubbed your eye, well, guess what? You just got inoculated. And if you hadn't been taking your vitamin C and your vitamin E, both of which prime the immune system, if you didn't get your vitamin D high enough, then you just got exposed. Now, with a cold, you can knock a cold out pretty quickly. Cold viruses are much more fragile than flu viruses. And if when you get those first symptoms of the scratchy throat and the dribbly nose and the sneezing, you jump in the hottest bathtub you can stand, the hottest shower you can stand, you drink the hottest cup of tea you can stand, you might knock out that virus before you go to bed that night. But if you decide you're feeling funky and you're just going to go to bed early, well, then by the time you wake up the next morning, the cold virus has inoculated itself. That's not the case with flu. With flu, the moment that you get those sudden onset symptoms of fever and aches, you are 100% inoculated. So you can reduce the severity You can shorten the duration of the flu, but you can't stop it in its tracks once it started. It is a pesky thing, is the best that I can say. Now, the use of herbs like andrographis and licorice are examples of herbs that are really, let's go into Chinese medicine for a minute. They're the kind of things that do what's called clearing heat. They reduce mucus, they calm and soothe, and they clear heat. So andrographis is one of the most important herbs to use when somebody does get the flu. Licorice is another one because it calms and soothes the respiratory tract and it reduces mucus. But isatis is another herb. It's not as well known, but it reduces airway inflammation. And so there are some remedies out there, and they almost always contain andrographis that can help to reduce both the duration and the severity of the flu. You know, because in 2011 and 2012, we had the lowest number of hospitalizations and the shortest flu season ever. Hey, guess what? Welcome to global heating. Global heating means we don't have as much cold air, so we don't have as much cold air for the flu virus to translate on. So what are we going to end up with this year? Nobody's got a crystal ball. Absolutely nobody knows what's going to happen. But if you haven't already gotten your flu shot, you're hearing the message from me. It's not anything that I can endorse. You know, after I read that Australia had eliminated flu vaccines completely, because they had so many kids under 5 getting really bad fevers, that they decided to eliminate the insistence, if you will, of their Center for Disease Control variety in telling people to inoculate their kids. You know, there was a terrible tragedy that happened in Finland a couple of years ago when 79 kids ended up with narcolepsy, ended up with a brain condition that happened where they can't stay awake. And Finland banned flu shots completely. Happily, the country of Finland is going to offer lifetime medical care to those 79 damaged children. But even in Sweden, they're investigating whether there's any worth to continuing in... And I say insisting only because of the fact that Big Pharma is making a bucket of money on vaccines. And so, no, I don't think all vaccines are useless. I know that vaccines have helped to virtually reduce polio and yellow fever and other conditions around the world. I know that when the Spanish flu hit in 1918, it was the greatest medical holocaust in history. 50 million people died. I didn't live through that, but I sure lived through the Asian flu that showed up in the end of the 1950s that killed between 1 and 2 million people, or the Hong Kong flu that happened in 68 and 69. You know, I'm not trying to minimize the horrible tragedy of the losses that happened from these flus, but taking something that you think is going to protect you when in fact it's something that potentially could harm you, that causes a real problem for me. So, yes, you may wish to jump in your car and go over to Palm Air Country Club because that's where the Sarasota County Medical or the Health Department is going to be giving out flu shots today over on Whitfield off University Parkway. They're going to be giving flu shots today from 11 to 1. So if you're a contrarian and you're listening to this and you're saying, oh, I don't care what Eve says about the danger of flu shots, I think getting a flu shot is a good idea. I've done it every year. Well, it tells me you don't have an egg allergy because flu viruses are grown on egg embryos. And so, you know, if you've got an allergy to eggs, the flu shot is definitely double dangerous for you. And remember, if you get the flu, you got to play it out. The same thing is true with a cold. You got to play it out. You may be able to shorten the duration and minimize the symptoms, but you can't minimize the amount of time that it takes for your white blood cells to make an antibody to that flu. Happily, once you've had the Malaysian flu, you never get the Malaysian flu again. If you've had the Hong Kong flu, you never get the Hong Kong flu again because you've got an antibody to that. But next year, another one's going to show up. But please pay attention to any member of your family who does get the flu. If they have fast breathing or their skin turns bluish, or kids that get so irritable they don't even want to be held, or they get a rash, that's the place you go to the doctor. When adults get pain in their chest, or they suddenly get dizzy or confused, or they're having severe vomiting, any difficulty in breathing, that's where you want emergency medical care. So don't minimize the fact that, you know, 3,000 to nearly 50,000 people die of the flu every year, but last year was the smallest number ever. Now, is that going to continue? At some point, we're going to get another kick-butt flu. You know, we've ended up with three pandemics every century. The ones that I mentioned before, the Spanish flu, the Asian flu, the Hong Kong flu. Those were the three pandemics that happened during the last century. We've already had one with the H1N1 in 2009. So they're not common, but they happen. And so what can you do to prevent? Well, the first thing you can do is wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. Keep your hands away from your eyes and your nose and your mouth. Well, I don't know about you, but I can't do that. You know, it's one of those little fidgety things, you know, that you rub your eye or you rub your nose. But please cover your sneezes and coughs. Please make people around you do the same thing. If somebody comes into your work and they're sick, send them home. Don't let them turn around and make the whole office sick or the whole family sick. You know, you need to get your sleep. During the holiday season, a lot of us shorten up on sleep. And as soon as you shorten up on sleep, you shorten up on immune activity. When you eat lousy, you know, have you ever heard of anybody during holiday season that eats too many sweets or has too much alcohol? Gee, I've heard that it can happen. Those are all things that can reduce your body's ability to fight. And so remember the facts about the flu. FACTS, fever, aches, chills, tired, and sudden onset. That's what tells you the flu is the flu. Make sure you're getting your vitamin D levels up. You know, the majority of individuals can very safely take 2,000 to 4,000 IUs of vitamin D a day. Your multi probably has no more than 400 IUs of vitamin D. And I would tell you in my practice, after doing hundreds of vitamin D tests, that it's not uncommon for me to put somebody on 5,000 IUs of vitamin D until we get their level up to that 65 plus that we're looking for. That helps to give us immunological protection. And remember that whole particle beta-glucan is one of the few things that I know about that can actually give your immune system some super protection, not only against flu, but against the cold viruses as well. But if you get the flu, andrographis is your herb. You know, I use a product in my practice called Aussie. And even though it's very rare for me to actually mention the name of a product, this is one of the most studied things that's been done in Europe in terms of the treatment of the flu. Something that's taken the second that first set of symptoms shows up. And so there are very many things that you can do. There are very many things that you can do in order to give yourself a better handle on cold and flu season. We'll come back and do another show on colds and how you treat colds, because there's about 200 cold viruses out there and they all manifest a little bit differently. This is Eve Prang Plews, and I'm a licensed nutrition counselor, and I'm here on Mondays at 9 o'clock with No Nonsense Nutrition. If you ever want to listen to any of the old shows that we've had on the air, you can always go up on Eve Plews podcast and find quite a collection, or eveplews.com, and read the columns that I've written here locally.